Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and joining me on my left for today's special Sussex County Cricket Club themed episode is none other than Sussex's off-spin sensation, Jack Carlson. So Jack, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. How's your day been so far, mate?
Yeah, brilliant. Great to be on. Yeah, it's a lovely day down in Hove today. I've just been up the grind for a pretty standard red ball training there. So a bit of gym and then a bowl and the batters, and then faced a bit of last week's podcast, Jimmy Atkins. So I had him in the nets. He was bowling some decent pace today. So yeah, it was a good battle.
Fair play, Jack. Fair play. Yeah, Jamie, great guest. And of course, for all the listeners out there, do go and listen to that one, of course. Jack's teammate down at Sussex, great guest. And Jack, to be honest, he said a lot of good things about you. So I'm looking forward to today's episode. Yeah. I'm not sure if you've actually tuned into our podcast regularly, but myself and Joe isn't here today, unfortunately, he's away. But we do mention the project down in Hove quite a lot. And your name continuously crops up. I mean, you just take wickets for fun at the moment, mate. It's incredible.
Yeah, I guess. I've had probably as good a start as I really could have hoped for. And yeah, I guess I probably wouldn't have expected it to happen like it has. But as you say, like, there's a good project going down here, and there's a lot of young boys really pushing each other on. So at the moment, I think that's kind of, it's being quite fruitful, and that we're all kind of bringing each other on and getting each other better in training days. And almost there's that healthy competition between us all that we want to be the young lad coming through and doing as well as we can to help Sussex win games of cricket.
Well, that is something that will be sure to put a smile on the faces of Sussex fans tuning in to today's podcast. I mean, it is such a fantastic project. It really is. Myself and Joe have sung the praises of Sussex's project down in Hove throughout the entirety of this season, and will continue to do so because it's so great to see so many young players get the opportunity. I mean, yourself, Ali Orr, Daniel Ibrahim, Jamie, of course, as well, Sean Hunt, Henry Crocombe. There are so many exciting talents down on the South Coast. It is incredible. But before we get into our discussion, I suppose, Jack, about Sussex and county cricket in general, we have to start right at the origin of the Jack Carlson cricketing journey. So what are your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
My first memories would be, so where I live back in Northern Ireland was a village called Waringstown, which is, I think I'm right in saying we hold the record amount of All-Ireland Cups won in club cricket, so a massive cricketing like village. And my house, which my parents moved into pretty much just as I was born, was right on the boundary rope. So bedrooms on the first floor looking over the cricket ground, and we had a hole in the fence we'd get through and then onto the cricket ground. So pretty much whether it was like as a child, like a baby almost crawling about and having sort of that as a back garden. All my earliest memories were spent at Waringstown Cricket Club watching the first team in cup finals and stuff like that, and really just getting a feel for being around cricket. My dad loved cricket, and two older brothers as well, so they were always getting involved in sports ahead of me because they were older. But pretty much whatever they did, I was going to do. So yeah, I followed in that path.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jack, it's a nice journey into cricket. I must admit, it always is nice when you have that family element. And I suppose they are your first role models, aren't they, really? As you mentioned, your dad, your brothers. It is always nice. And to live right in the boundary ropes of a cricket club, I mean, that is the dream, isn't it? How brilliant was that growing up on the boundary?
And again, like, not just any cricket club, like Waringstown, again, the facilities, the ground itself is stunning, like, has held international matches, held interprovincial matches. It's like, it's a high quality ground, high quality facilities as well. So it wasn't even like I was just on the sort of a council like kind of playing field around. It was a really lovely place. So like trees around it and stuff. It was just a great place to play and grow up. Like even kicking a football about and stuff like that. It's just such a lovely area.
I Googled it, by the way. It is an absolutely stunning cricket ground, of course. For all the listeners out there, please do go and Google it if you can. It is a fantastic.
Yeah, definitely do.
Yeah, well, there you go. Straight from Jack Carlson himself. Recommended. Yeah, it's a beautiful little location, I must admit. And Jack, you mentioned there, of course, about being right on the boundary of a cricket club. So, of course, you're going to get into the game. We usually ask about, you know, why did you choose cricket over football, for example? But I'm guessing for you, cricket very much was literally on the doorstep. I'm guessing that's why you made the leap into the game in the first place.
Yeah, definitely. Like, again, that was one thing my dad always wanted, was to me to play as many sports as possible. So, you know, even though I was loving cricket and played cricket from sort of almost 4 years of age, I was playing mini rugby. I was playing football for the school team. You know, we went on holiday and we would ski, and I played golf in the summer up in the north coast of Ireland. And we'd go camping, play golf and, you know, tennis, literally every sport under the sun. Just, and I think dad's obviously from a PE teacher's background. He sort of knows, you know, all sports feed into themselves, which is one of his things, you know, being able to move and react and hand out, coordination, all kind of feed into themselves. So I definitely wasn't boxed off into cricket early, but it was probably between it and rugby were the two that I really were my two favourite sports, no doubt. And to be fair, probably in those early years, rugby was probably the main one. But you, I guess, to the infrastructure and having a professional sports team in Northern Ireland, in Ulster Rugby, that you could go and watch. So that was, you know, having those kind of role models, which obviously you had in Irish cricket as well. And it was a bit of a golden period, but you didn't get the same exposure and stuff. So I guess in those earliest years, probably rugby was actually the main one.
That's interesting, Jack. That is very, very interesting. So what kind of defined cricket for you then? Why didn't you go into the world of professional rugby? What made you choose cricket over that sport?
Probably I was always quite a small, skinny child. So I played a decent bit of rugby, but it was pretty clear from, you know, got to like 12, 13 and you're coming up against, you know, absolute units that, you know, cricket, I was a bit better at cricket than I was going to be at rugby. And I loved my rugby and played up to sort of 16, but, you know, probably from 11, it was fairly clear that if I was going to go and do something professionally, that, you know, it was going to be cricket, or at least a lot higher chance of doing that.
Yeah, you get that quite often actually here on the podcast with regards to rugby in particular, because it is a tough and physical sport. As soon as growth stops, suddenly cricket becomes a bit more appealing.
Yeah,
because you haven't got the and big units tackling you.
With getting to that kind of age of 11, 12, you know, 2011 obviously was Kevin O'Brien in Bangalore against England, and you really had, like, you know, an Irish team, like, you're playing England and they're playing Australia and they're putting in good performances, they're beating Bangladesh on the regular, you know, they had a really strong side, and then you get to see more of them and there's more exposure, and I guess you're drawn to it again because you can go to big games and at Stormont or at Malahide and watch guys like that up and close, and yeah, and get a real feel for it.
Absolutely. And yeah, would you say that is the biggest moment in Irish cricketing history? I mean, for those who don't know what we're discussing here, 2011 at the Chinnaswamy Stadium in Bengaluru, and Kevin O'Brien just pulled off one of the most ridiculous run chases, if not the most extraordinary, in World Cup history to take Ireland to victory against England, which was massive. It's a seminal moment in Irish cricketing history. Jack, for you personally, would you say that is the biggest moment in Irish cricket to date?
I'd say it's a very close one between that and Pakistan 07. Because I think Pakistan 07 almost, it lies the platform for 2011 to happen. With that, like, with what happened on St. Patrick's Day in the West Indies. So it's a close one, probably in terms of the actual game itself. Like, that England game obviously blows it out of the water in terms of, you know, as a cricketing spectacle, but it's a very close one between, you know, as the biggest game in Irish cricket. But again, two amazing games. And I do, even though I was only six or seven when the Pakistan game, I can remember, like, pretty clearly, like, where I was and how it felt and stuff. It was amazing.
Fair play, Jack. I mean, yeah, both massive games, weren't they? And as you said, laying the foundation for 2011. It was a fantastic run chase. We're still haunted by it as England fans, going to be honest. Yeah, it wasn't the greatest of games for the Three Lions and a Crown. But yeah, definitely a seminal moment, as I said, for Irish cricket. And of course, that did feature Kevin O'Brien, who has just recently retired from the ODI format for Ireland. But he is an absolute legend of Irish cricket. And I suppose that this relates to my next question, Jack, is that who were your cricketing role models in those early days? Did you look up to Irish cricketers, English cricketers, any other international or even county cricketers? And if so, who did you look up to and try to emulate in those formative years?
Yeah, so my first one would definitely have been, again, because he was playing at Warrenstown and he was played against Pakistan in 07, and he was an Irish record cap holder at one stage. It was Cal McCallum. So he was part of that kind of first Irish team that, you know, went to major tournaments and stuff. But then again, was a PE teacher at a local school. So he played every Saturday for Warrenstown, and you watched him, you know, do his thing on Saturday in club cricket and take four for 20 off 10 every week and go, this guy's class. So like I originally bowled like seam up as kind of most kids do. Mm-hmm. And then one day, I think I remember being at a Warrenstown game, and I was maybe like 7 or 8, and I was trying to show Kyle, like, because he had quite a distinct action, and I was trying to show him, like, Kyle, I can bowl like you. And he was like, oh, that's like class, like, you know, keep it up, let's bowl some off spin. So I guess that would probably be one of the first ones. And then going from that, kind of like watching Ed, when I first came over to Sussex and being brought over by Ed Joyce and watching Ed, you know, at Sussex and for Ireland in World Cups, I guess was another one. And then seeing what Owen Morgan did, and is still doing, I guess, as an Irishman in English cricket. Remember, he made his England debut against Ireland at Stormont. I remember being at that game and getting a photo with him and getting an autograph. And actually, again, Luke Wright was in that England team as well. So it's funny how that works as well. But I guess those are probably three people that definitely I remember looking up to. And Kyle especially, for being so close to him in the vicinity and seeing how he went about things and obviously played in some massive games for Ireland.
Absolutely, Jack. I mean, three fantastic role models there, to say the least, all absolute legends. Well, I suppose Owen Morgan of English cricket, as opposed to Irish cricket, of course. But yeah, Ed Joyce as well, what a player he was for Sussex. Absolutely sensational batsman.
I think you look at Ed's stats and he averaged 49 in first class cricket for Sussex, which is just over seven seasons. Like, it's just amazing to think, you know, that those type of numbers are scary. And I mean, they get you an England test call up, no doubt, at the moment. So it's remarkable numbers and an incredible player. Like, made it look so good as well. That's like, made it look, lying with left hander, just made it look so good.
Absolutely. He did. Great, great player. Really, really good player. Of course, no longer does play counter cricket or cricket in general, really, does he, Ed Joyce? He's retired now.
Yeah, he's retired.
Oh, what a player he was, though. And again, Sussex fans will be looking back very, very fondly at Ed's time down on the South Coast. But talking of Ed Joyce and Owen Morgan, so of course, Sussex and Middlesex respectively, Jack, I think it's time that we talk a bit about counter cricket here on the Counter Cricket Podcast, of course, our titular name. But Jack, for you personally, what were your first ever memories of county cricket? Do you have any kind of moments or memories from county cricket that you can look back on and recall per se?
Yeah, I always remember just watching finals there, and sort of in the early 2020, like, I guess it was what was mostly on the TV and stuff. I couldn't really get to games being in Ireland, so I remember finals day, like as a young kid, even the mascot race and Bumble on the bout, and those are the kind of things that stick in your head. So it would have been more the 2020 side of things. And we actually, when I was about sort of 9, 10, we'd sort of spent actually some of our summers, when we were 2 years in a row, we kind of did like 2 weeks in England, kind of went to a test match. We went to England-Pakistan test match at Trent Bridge. Went to like up in the north, kind of went, saw Yorkshire play 2020. So went and saw Leeds play football. Like, we kind of, like, dear love my mum, sort of, she was carted around every sporting venue in England nearly for 2 summers. But that was some really good memories, actually. That was the first time I kind of got to see it in the flesh and be there and get a real feel for it, and a buzz of actually like a proper crowd in a stadium, you know, watching cricket, which I'd never really experienced before. So yeah, that would be it really.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jack, some nice memories there. I mean, finals day, of course, going up to Headingley as well. Nice ground.
Yeah.
Very, very nice ground. Trent Bridge as well. Of course, an international venue. And I suppose in those earlier years, of course, you play for Sussex now, Jack, but was it always Sussex? or was there a particular county aside from Sussex that you looked up to per se?
I remember, when we went to watch Lanx versus Sussex in a Pro 40 game up at Old Trafford, so we're up in the north. I remember I got a Lancashire training top that day. It must have been about 9 or 10. So yeah, I think I might have been a bit of a Lanx fan at the start, but it's certainly been washed out of me now, and I'm a full-blown Sussex Sharks or entry.
I'll tell you what, Jack, I'm glad my Lancashire co-host isn't here today. So he would have been all over that, saying that you should have been supporting Lancashire. My goodness.
It is a big mistake a long time ago, and I'm clean from it.
You might get the Yorkshire fans on side there as well, Jack, with that. It's no fair play. As I said, it is weird how things do pan out, of course. So a Pro 40 match, Lancashire versus Sussex, and now all these years later, playing for Sussex. Incredible. Mm-hmm. It's weird.
I remember talking to Yards about it, Mike Yardley, when he was batting coach, and I think he might have got 80-odd not out and won the game for Sussex and probably sent me home in, with a big grumpy beck on my face because I wanted to watch Lanx win. But it was, it's funny how things work out.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is very, very strange. Oh, my goodness. That is weird, isn't it? He could have been a Lancashire player potentially at some point.
probably been in the twos behind Parky, to be honest, but
true, very, very true. Matt Parkinson, what a spinner. Absolutely brilliant. Should be playing for England, in my opinion.
Yeah, great spinner, really nice guy as well, from what I've come across him. So lovely bloke, and obviously a quality operator.
Absolutely. Fingers crossed he can, of course, make that next step up. Who knows? Could be a test spinner one day. Matt Parkinson, we'll have to wait and see, as could you, Jack, actually, and we'll talk about that in due course later on. But talking of Sussex, Jack, because we've had a little bit of a dialogue there about Lancashire versus Sussex, but we have to talk about the Southern County, I suppose. Where did that actually come about in the first place? Where did the connection to Sussex actually originate from?
Yeah, so it was when I was, when I was 11, kind of became clear that, cricket was something I was sort of excelling at from my age. And obviously when you're 11, you kind of bet under 11s, under 13s and 15s. But in the under 11s team, I think I went the season, didn't get out once, and ended up, we got the All-Ireland under 11 cup final, which, when you're 11 is the biggest thing ever. But you look back now and it seems fairly insignificant. But I think I got 120-odd not out, and it was a game against Clontarf from Dublin. And obviously when an 11-year-old gets 120 not out, there's, the local paper will get involved and go, mm-hmm. Take a wee picture of him and that. And I think Ed just got wind of it from being a Dubliner and sort of Dublin News. And then he rang up Kyle McCallan because he knew Kyle from playing for Ireland and knew I was at Warrenstown and Kyle was at Warrenstown. So then Kyle got in touch with Dad and said, Ed, obviously Irish cricketer and made a good career in England, was, he wants to give him the opportunity to come over and trial and see if he likes it and see if Sussex like him. And so then Keith Greenfield got in touch, he was the academy director at the time, and I set up a trial. I think it was February 2012 I first went over for a trial, and I must have done all right because they wanted to be back in the summer for a few games. So, and I started from there, pretty much played under 12s that summer. Again, played my first game. Tom Clark and Ali Orr were both playing. Then played 13s. And, when you hit sort of 14, you go into a bit of an EPP, Emerging Players Program. And, there was a couple of tours to Abu Dhabi and, training camps. And then you kind of progress towards trying to gain an academy spot at 16. And then that was offered to me in the sort of summer of 2017, to start in September 2017, and I was Carl Hopkinson was the academy director at the time. And so then I set up and moved over full time and started Hurstpier Point College to join the academy.
Wow. Again, it's weird how life works out, isn't it? After all of those years as well, coming up through the ranks, and now you're playing alongside Ali, Tom's also there. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, that I'd have played with, Tom, Ali, Henry Crokham, Jamie Atkins. I think first played with Jamie when I was 13. He was 12. Even played with Dan, Ibrahim and Archie when they were about 14. And I was maybe 16, 17. So all those guys that have come through, I've played with played with them from an early age, and I think again that's what helps all trying to drive each other on, because you know we genuinely do want each other to do well. As obviously we want our own personal performance, but there's genuine, you know, desire for each other to do well and help Sussex win games of cricket.
Well, absolutely, of course. You all have that collective affinity, don't you? Seeing as you've been through the ranks together, you've all been on that journey at the same stage, really. I mean, it is incredible, and we'll talk about that in due course, Jack. But before we do, I just want to go back to the start of your Sussex days, of course, because that must have been a massive move, going from Northern Ireland, as you mentioned, growing up literally on the doorstep of Warringtown Cricket Club. You're on the boundary. You've known Northern Ireland for pretty much the entirety of your life. And then all of a sudden, this opportunity comes in the south of England and you grab it. But I suppose at the time, was that a really difficult decision to make for you personally? Or is that something that you kind of adapted to quite well? How did you actually find that transition?
Massively. That was, again, and I think it's one thing Carl Hopkinson spoke to me at the time. He said, you know, if you look at the boys you met at the top, they've all got their own story and they've all had to overcome something, and nothing is ever easy, and there's tough decisions to be made. And obviously I was 16, so that was a massive move to move from, you know, rural Northern Ireland, going to state grammar school and starting at 9 and finishing at 3 and living with my parents and just being a normal sort of 16-year-old Northern Irishman, to then going to, you know, a really quite nice private school in the south of England that I'd never experienced anything like before in my life, and boarding and you know, leaving friends and everything you know behind to go out on my own. But again, it was very tough, but it definitely made me, it's made me a better cricketer, because I've had to become a more resilient, rounded person, which then I think massively feeds into cricket. And I think it's amazing to say how things work out, and some of the stuff that I was so lucky that when I moved over, the head of S&C at the time was a guy from Northern Ireland, Conor Brown, and obviously he saw a little skinny, timid 16-year-old Northern Irishman rock up in the academy. So he massively went out of his way to help me settle into Hurst and just really was a massive help. So again, little things like that, if Connor hadn't been around, I don't know if I'd actually been able to stay, because you know the first few months were so tough and stuff. So again, it is amazing how right people, right place, that it sorts you out.
Exactly. And the fact is, it's paid off in tremendous fashion. It really has. I mean, not only are you here on the illustrious Counts Cricket podcast, Jack, but you're also taking wickets week in, week out for Sussex. I mean, that must be tremendous in itself. You are performing on the biggest domestic stage, potentially in the entire world. County cricket is revered. Some of the greatest players in the game have played county cricket over the years. So it's paid off. All of that hardship, that initial adversity, has at least paid off, hasn't it?
Yeah, massively. And I think probably when you're 16, you know, for me, I was sort of thinking, oh, quite naive. You're thinking, oh, what if it doesn't work out? And I think nobody would ever have, you know, had a negative thing to say, it didn't work out and I had to come back to Ireland. But through your own personal pride, you're like, oh, I looked like a bit of a so-and-so. Again, I was lucky that, you know, I went to had a very sporting class at my secondary school back home. And one of the guys, one of my mates, he just moved over to West Brom as an apprentice footballer the year before, and he'd been able to settle quite well, and that kind of gave me again the confidence to go, okay, I can do it as well, I'll be able to settle in and stuff. So again, little things that all help out. And again, even it's funny, about a month after I joined the academy, November 2017, there was another S&C from Northern Ireland came over, a guy, David McElwain, who's still with us, and he used to play for Ulster rugby, and I used to go and watch him. You know, as I say, I used to go and watch Ulster, and he was playing, and then again, he's been a massive help to me since he's been around. So there's so many things that fall into place and help. Like, also go back to when I was 11, if I'd have shinned one early doors in that cup final at Donnacht Clontarf, Ed might, he might not, might, he wouldn't have thought to pick up the phone because he wouldn't have heard about me. So again, it is amazing now.
It is. Yeah. And not to go too profound and too, you know, philosophical and deep, but it is true, isn't it? All like these little things that at the time seem almost insignificant. If they would have, you know, panned out differently, who knows how things would have panned out? It is so, so strange. I mean, we're not going to get into that too much, of course, here on the podcast. It is a bit profound, mm-hmm. but yeah, it is incredible. It really is. It blows my mind as well, not just with cricket, but in life in general. And Jack, I suppose the culmination of that initial move over to England, all of your time coming through the ranks, playing in the academy, playing second 11 cricket, culminated in your first team debut in the county championship, or I suppose it was known in 2020, the Bob Willis Trophy. So what do you remember from that game for Sussex? How momentous of an occasion was that for you personally as a cricketer?
Yeah, obviously amazing. I think I remember finding Sauls, who's been coach at the time, I remember him kind of telling me we had a game against Hampshire beforehand, like 2 days, a couple of days beforehand, and I was playing in that, and he was kind of was like, yeah, you're gonna play a first game. So I remember just really from just trying to massively enjoy it. I remember speaking to my dad and saying, like, this is pretty much, we spent so many games, played so many games of cricket, hit so many balls, bowled so many balls, and this is what we've always chased after, and now it's here. Just go out and enjoy it, because, you know, you only make your debut once, and, you know, you're never gonna mess up a whole cricket career in one game. Like, it's the least pressure you'll ever play under, because there's no expectation. You just go out there and soak it up and have as much fun as possible. And like, Sauls was a massive help going into it and gave me so much belief in myself and gave me such clear plans and such clear fields and what we were going to do, and just kept it so simple. And with that, obviously allowed me to go out and performed it to the best that I could. But just getting the cap and seeing 755 on it, and, you know, thinking of the amount of people, you know, that have gone before you and played. And yeah, it's a special day altogether now. It's brilliant. Absolutely. And we got a win in 3 days, and it was class.
Well, exactly. I was going to mention that, because, of course, we have had a Northern Irish cricketer here on the podcast, Mark Adair, who unfortunately lost his county championship debut, his Royal London One Day Cup debut, and his T20 Blast debut for Warwickshire. So, Jack, you're actually the first Northern Irish cricketer here on the County Cricket Podcast to win on debut. So
happy days.
Exactly, yeah. 94-run win. It was emphatic, wasn't it? 3 wins and a massive, massive victory for the Martlets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I remember it was the first time, like, Salty was on fire that game, like 80 and 60. And I remember it was the first time I genuinely played a red ball game with Ollie Robinson. And I just remember I was at square leg, like, you know, I was just thinking, this bloke's going to get a wicket every ball here. Like, it was amazing to watch. I'd never sort of seen him that, like, in competition the way he was. And it was eye-opening, really, to see the level of skill and the competition that he had on show. It was amazing now.
Yeah, 100%. I think last year, did he take 14 wickets in 2 games? It was something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, he was in England bubbles, I think. So thankfully he only played 2, which meant I could lead the wicket taking charge after, you know, playing 4. But I think if he'd have played all 5, he'd have probably got about 40.
So. Yeah, I reckon that as well. Simon Harmer topped the charts and he got 38. My goodness, that would have been interesting, wouldn't it? But as you said, was with England in biosecure bubbles. But talking of your debut, Jack, because this was something which Jamie Atkins actually said on a previous podcast, you know every single one of your wickets that you've taken so far, all 40 of them in the county championship. So, Jack, I've got a challenge for you. Okay, starting with your debut and your first wicket, do you think you would be able to tell us in order every single one of your wickets as you take a swill of your drink just to get ready and prepare for an absolute masterclass?
Yeah, clearing the throat. Yeah, I'm fairly confident. Definitely no last year's. Might get a little bit cloudy in this year, but I'm fairly confident. So I kick it off with it.
Let's go. First wicket then.
First wicket was Joe Wellerly, caught behind. Second wicket, Keith Barker. Went for a little lap sweep around the corner, sort of top edge. Saltley ran around, caught it from slip. Third one, John Holland, or not John Holland.
Ian Holland.
Ian Holland. Yeah. John Holland's left arm spinner from Australia.
Yep.
Ian Holland, reverse sweep and bold. Then Tom Alsop, run down, bold. Mason Crean, top edge sweep, caught by Brownie, actually. Then next game was Kent, didn't get a wicket. They got $500 for one. So
yeah,
none to talk about there. Then we went to Middlesex. Nick Gubbins, LBW. Martin Anderson, LBW. Miguel Cummins, bold. Tim Murda, LBW. Then Surrey at the Oval. Borthwick, LBW. Burns, LBW. Taylor caught, Moriarty bowled, Verdi caught short leg, and then Borthwick again, second innings caught slip. And that's last year, I think, done?
All 15.
And then this year, Rob Jones reverse sweep caught point. Tim Villas reverse sweep caught deep point, two of the worst I've got, no doubt. And then we went to Glammy and Van der Guchten. Whale, Hogan. Then who we play after that? They played the Yorkies at home, did we?
Right, yep.
Jordan Thompson, first innings, LBW. Second innings, Kohler Cadmore stumped. Root caught behind.
The big one.
Yeah, the big one. Long half volley. Balanced, LBW leaving. How many is that? That's Tattersall caught slip. Olivier, LBW. Then Lanks is where I get a little bit cloudy. Lanks, Davies bowled. Jennings caught slip. Livingston caught mid wicket. Croft caught behind. Second dig. Wales, Mahmood Livingston. And where does that bring me to? Who we get after that? With Northants away, no wickets. Then Kent, Zach Crawley. Or no. Before that, I had Gilchrist, then Miguel Cummins, then Zach Crawley. And then, where do we go? We go to the Yorkies away, do we?
Northants before.
Oh, Northants home. Rob Keogh, I think, was the only one in the
correct
match.
Yep, correct. Yeah. You've got 37 out of 37 so far.
And then, I looked proper plum in that game as well. I wasn't given. Yorkies away. Got no balance. Milan, Steve Patterson. There we go. Done.
I don't think you're going to be able to pick this up on the microphone, but I am actually applauding. That is absolutely sensational. All 40. Yeah, take your celebratory swiggy, your drink, Jack. That is absolutely... That's cricket badger.
Remarkable levels of cricket badger in there, yeah. I wasn't sure I was ever going to get one, so I'll make sure I try and remember as many of them as I can now.
That, honestly, I'm shocked. Pleasantly, of course, that is fantastic.
The lack of a life that I have, and know them all one by one. How good.
Hey, Jack, there's nothing wrong with being a cricket badger. Okay, fair enough. Fair I can't remember enough. All of my wickets like that because I've only got one at the moment in competitive cricket. But no, that is incredible. It really is. I mean, all 40, to know all 40 in order as well. Yeah, that is some very, very good recall, I must admit.
If only I had the recall for my A levels, I'd be my mother would be much prouder of me. But nah, I'll try and remember my wickets instead.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jack. Mission complete. Simple as that. 40 out of 40, and also just not only the 40 wickets in just 12 matches, which is incredible in itself, but 2 5 wicket hauls as well, which is always lovely to see as a spinner. It really is. 26.37 average, and a 2.8 economy rate. Jack, I have a bit of a question for you. With regards to this, what do you think is the secret behind your success? I know that this again is quite a profound question, but what do you think is the underlying factor behind this incredible success so far so early on in your county career?
I think it's probably not a thing. It's probably a name. It's probably in Salisbury, to be honest. Yeah, massively. Like, his knowledge, his expertise, his ability to communicate, just how he is as a human being and everything, is probably the reason, to be honest. Like, going through again Sussex ranks, like, I was a nice enough spinner and decent enough batter to be an academy cricketer, and, you know, I always put nice shape on the ball and it dropped nicely. I never had that sort of extra bite and quick, like, ability to spin the ball quick. And then from working with Sauls, we've obviously done a lot of technical work in terms of my alignment and how I approach the crease and stuff, which is just helped me bowl that extra bit quicker and being a bit more efficient with my energy. But everything he's helped me with is, I don't really doubt that that's the reason I've had my success, and hopefully will continue to do so with him as head coach down at Sussex.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think that is going to happen, Jack. As I mentioned right at the start of the podcast, I mean, yourself, Amar Verdi, Dan Moriarty, three names really to watch out for in terms of young spinners in this country. And one thing that I love about your bowling in particular, I am an off spinner, by the way, obviously nowhere near as talented, unfortunately, for myself. But one thing that I do like about your bowling is the drift. That is something which is such a vital weapon in the spinner's arsenal, because you can make a batsman look stupid. And I think that you've done that on numerous occasions in county cricket so far. And I suppose for any younger spinners out there, Jack, so, I don't know, 12, 13, 14-year-old spinners who are maybe just making the transition, I suppose, into playing cricket a bit more seriously, what advice would you give them in terms of being a spinner at such a young age?
I think probably, you know, again, I spoke to the Simon Harmer as well, who was good to speak to last year, and pretty much, again, he reiterated everything that Sauls had been speaking to me about. But what I would say is obviously you have to be able to turn the ball. That's to give you, especially red ball cricket, to give yourself a chance, you have to be able to turn the ball, and you have to be sort of vulnerable enough to maybe make changes and try things if that's not happening. But also a massive thing is being able to get the ball to go straight on as well when it's spinning. So on a spinning deck, can you get it to go straight on? And I think if you looked at a highlights package of my wickets, I'd say 70-80% are from balls that beat right-handers on the outside and left-handers on the inside. And, you know, you probably look at it and go, that bloke can't turn it off the straight. But I guess it's something, again, I've worked on with Sauls, and he's helped me with massively, that it's getting a ball that can go straight on. Just gives you that ability to kind of threaten both edges. And it's something, again, you look at that India tour of with England, and something that Axel Patel did so well, and it just looked impossible to play, because one ball looked exactly the same and it was spinning, you know, 2 feet, and the next one was going straight on at pace. And when you can do that with that consistency, it's incredibly hard to face.
Absolutely. It is, yeah. And we saw that in fruition, I suppose, in that series, didn't we, with Axar Patel. Also thought Jack Leach bowled incredibly well in that series as well, didn't he? In particular,
oh, yeah.
Ahmedabad, with the one that just slid on.
And it's so hard to do on pitches like that are very receptive to spin, because I guess on English pitches, if you can bowl a side spinner, that'll usually kind of skip on and not grip. Whereas in India, even a sort of your side spinner can spit and grip and turn massively. So it's something, like, it's so difficult to do on turning pitches. But, you know, thankfully, you know, Sauls has been able to help me with that, and we've sort of been able to half get a ball that can kind of skip on a bit.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jack, it's working. I think it's pretty obvious to tell that from the stats and from watching your bowl. And I suppose in terms of your off-spin bowling, Jack, if you can tell us, of course, but what variations do you possess? Of course, you've got the stock standard ball, you've got an arm ball, but do you have any kind of, you know, not magic deliveries per se, but variation balls that you can use at your disposal?
Again, I obviously quite traditional. I feel like I don't have anything spectacular up my sleeve that's gonna wow everyone. But again, something Sauls speaks about is, you know, there's 9 different spots on each side of the crease you can use. So you can bowl mid crease, wide crease, close to the stumps. You can bowl that on the crease line, you can bowl that mid crease, you can bowl it from the stump line. So as well as having variations out your hand, you've got variations on the crease. So say I've got a stock ball and I've got a top spinner, or, you know, I've got a side spinner and then trying to bowl one that can go underneath and go straight. If you've got four or five balls, or even three or four, that then you can bowl in nine spots of the crease over or around, you have almost 100 different balls that you can bowl, which is more, again, a massive confidence thing. That if I feel like, oh, somebody's, you know, doesn't look like I'm missing the middle of their bat, or they're comfortable, you go, actually, right, I can subtly change this, you know, and I have so many different balls to go to, you know, instead of just thinking, oh, I've either got it can spin or it can slide. And but you can do that from, you know, as I said, different spots in the crease or over around. And yeah, so I don't have anything, you know, ridiculous up my sleeve, and not like a Sunil Narine or an Ajmal, but I guess it's that sort of subtle variation which has been able to help me so far in my career.
Well, fair enough. Good choices there with the examples as well. Sunil Narine with the Karen ball that just slides on, hits middle, and then of course Syed Ajmal, who played county cricket, didn't he, for Worcestershire? And he had one of the most ridiculous doosras, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, incredible. Like, again, I don't know how you play that. And, you know, having that kind of mystery is obviously something as a traditional off spinner, it's hard to get. But, you know, for your leg twisters and your boys who are a bit more unorthodox, it's such an incredible weapon to have, like, especially in white ball cricket now as well. It'll certainly earn you a few quid.
Yeah, definitely. It does look at Varun Chakravarti from India, for example, the mystery spinner from the Kolkata Knight Riders. He is a testament to that. But in terms of red ball cricket, Jack, and I know this is a bit cliche, but just for any young spinners out there, just in case they want to learn about this, what do you think is more important? Would you say it's accuracy or variation? Because for me, I always look at it as that metronomic accuracy. I always look at red ball cricket as almost making the batsman make the mistake, almost by offering up the same delivery, not time and time and time again, but, you know, just putting it out there, almost enticing the batsman into making a mistake. Do you see that the same way? Or do you also think variation does have a rather major part to play in red ball cricket, I suppose?
I think probably your accuracy is the main thing. And if you look at, you know, with the stats, I know you've had Dunners on here as well. I think, you know, the stats for if you hit the top of off, you know, I guess something like over 29% of the time as a team, you know, you hardly ever lose games of cricket, or you've great success in pulling teams out. So the accuracy is massive, but I guess it's having that, if you can have those variations, but only if they have that same accuracy, really. Because, you know, there's no point, as you say, bowling two maidens at someone and then trying to do something different and bowling a big full toss goes for six, and you're kind of, that pressure's off and you're back to square one. So definitely, I think that's sometimes when I find myself as well, and I have a bit of expectation on myself, and I go searching to try and take wickets. I go away from just trying to bowl and hit the top off, and I guess that's when I have my most success, when I just try and be as relentless as possible and hit the top off as much as I can.
Well, Jack, if I could touch upon that, actually, because you've mentioned something there which does plague a lot of young spinners, and that is searching for wickets. We see it so many times, so often, I suppose, in Test cricket, in terms of young, like 23, 24-year-old spinners, when things aren't going their way, they suddenly start going a lot fuller. The variations suddenly start becoming the major factor, as opposed to the standard stock ball. How do you prevent yourself from slipping into that bad habit of searching for wickets? How do you get that control back in your bowling?
I guess, yeah, a lot of it can sometimes come from clarity of role. So for me, again, early season, my role was to go at 2.5 and over and bowl as many overs from one end so seamers could rotate. So when you know that's your role, then you're not going to go searching for wickets. And actually, by doing that, you probably pick up two or three. And again, communication is a massive thing, and something that you go back to, that Sauls is so good at, that even when there is expectation for me and maybe fourth innings or third innings when it's going to take wickets, that again, he's so clear and reminds me that, you know, how I'm going to do that is by bowling with good action on the ball, energy on the ball at good pace into the top of off, and doing it for a long period of time. Which, you know, it's just something you've got to keep reminding yourself when you're out there and try and not get clouded in your kind of decision making.
That's some great advice. It really is for any young spinners out there. And it does show the importance of Ian Salisbury as well in terms of clarity, because I know, Jack, you have got a very good cricket brain on your shoulders, but you are still a young spinner. It's as simple as that. I mean, there's so much to learn in this game, and I think you're doing a great job personally, mate. But having Ian Salisbury as that mentor, it is so vital, isn't it? I mean, how important has he been in honing the Jack Carson that we see in cricket today?
Like I said, I've only played 12 first class games of cricket, so I'm still learning so much, and actually pretty much learning every day with Sauls. He's 884 first class wickets, like, so, you know, he's played plenty of games of cricket and gained plenty of experience. And I think that's one thing as well that he tries to push, is that yes, he's so helpful, but he wants me to help become my own best coach as well, and being able to remind myself when I'm out there and not rely on him as much probably as I do at the moment. But it's just, again, like every lunch break, tea break, probably, especially if we're bowling, that, you know, I'll come back, get my lunch, and probably sit and talk to him about what we're going to do and what I didn't do too well in that session and what I did do well and what maybe we need to change and stuff like that. So he's just been incredibly helpful in that way as well, like mid-game and giving me guidance and maybe getting messages onto the park at stages and stuff like that.
Well, that is excellent here. It really is, Jack. That is brilliant here with Salisbury. And it's funny because Jamie Atkins mentioned that last week, actually, in teammates, which we will get to, obviously, later on in today's episode. But he did mention about you, yeah, spending a lot of time with Salisbury. And I tell you what, that's a good thing as a young cricketer. You've got to learn as much as possible. While you are in this stage in your cricketing journey, you have to learn every single lesson that you can. Just take things on board. Learn from a great mentor in Ian Salisbury. The guy's played test cricket, hasn't he? And first-class cricket.
Yeah.
He's a great, great resource to have, Jack. So while you can, definitely maximise those opportunities.
Massively, 100%. Hopefully he's around for many years to come as well.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And I think Sussex fans will definitely share that sentiment. But Jack, before we get into our discussion about the future and, of course, our wrap-up segment, which is Teammates, a classic here on the Counter Cricket Podcast, I suppose it has something to do with this discussion, but considering you're only 12 games in to your first-class career, but you face some incredibly strong batsmen, international level. I mean, you got the England captain, Joe Root, out, for goodness sake. You played him, Keaton Jennings, you played Adam Lyth, Dawid Malan, Liam Livingstone, all of these phenomenal cricketers. I suppose the question I have to ask is, who is the most difficult batsman that you've faced so far to date? Would it be Root? Would it be Malan? Lyth? Who would it be, in your personal opinion, and why?
For me, it would be between Keaton Jennings and Dawid Malan. Obviously, Keaton Jennings is like a very renowned player of spin, and I think what he was so hard to bowl at is he was so confident in the ability to just kind of lap sweep around the corner for one, and it almost wasn't even a risk, and in a strong reverse, and he backed his defence as well. So I found him so difficult to build up pressure to, and I felt like with him I was relying on me bowling almost a magic ball to get him out. Like, I didn't feel like he was going to make a mistake. And then Dawid Malan of Yorkshire was again just so free flowing in his hands and his feet, like backed his own ability, backed his own foot movement. Like, the amount of times he sort of like was running down, and I'm like, oh, I've got him here, and he would just never miss it. Like, it was just, it was honestly, I couldn't believe it. Like, kind of just a languid flow of the bat, and he would hit it right out of the middle, out to the deep cover sweeper, and kind of walk up the other end. Like, you know, it was the easiest thing in the world. And you just kind of, you're at the end of your mark being like, oh, this bloke could hit me anywhere if he wanted. And yeah, probably those two were just looked so comfortable and clear in what they were doing. I think that's the massive thing. And you can tell when somebody's clear in their plans and knows where they're going to score, and when they back their defences as well. So they did that so well, those two guys.
Yeah, it's the worst thing you can feel as a bowler, isn't it? When you feel like you can't get someone out. And I completely get where you're coming from with that Dawid Malan innings. I mean, he deserved a 200. I'm just going to put it out there. He really did. And you bowled him for 199, Jack. That was a bit of a bittersweet moment for me personally, because it's great to see an off-spinner take a wicket. Of course it is. But at the same time, Milan on 199. He had batted so beautifully up until that point. I mean, what was the feeling like when you got his wicket? Because obviously there must have been some relief, some satisfaction. But I don't know, Jack, what's going through your mind at that moment?
To be honest, I think we were probably about 120 overs into the phase, so I was pretty glad to see the back of him, to be honest with you. And he batted amazingly well, and one of the best innings I've seen live and been on the field for. And I guess he did deserve 200, but I'm sure to take him 199 at the start of the day.
Exactly, yeah. And to be fair, Jack, you got your wicket, so win-win, I suppose. Maybe not so much for Milan. Would have liked that double century, but as you said, 199. Yeah. You're not going to complain, are you, when you get that kind of score?
Certainly not, no. Certainly not, indeed.
Absolutely. And in terms of your batting, Jack, who do you say is the toughest bowler that you've actually faced so far? You mentioned earlier Simon Harmer, of course, an absolute wizard in county cricket. And you faced some brilliant seam bowlers as well, from the likes of Yorkshire, Lancashire, Northants this season. Who do you say has been the standout bowler that you've faced so far?
That is a very good question. I haven't really ever given that much thought, but I think probably last year Miguel Cummins bowled quick at me and was tough. This year Saqib Mahmood. Gareth Berg away at Northants, like on a green seamer, genuinely just doing all sorts, like couldn't lay a bat on it. I think I managed to face maybe 30 or 40 balls, but genuinely, I just could not get a bat on it. But as well, to be fair, one of the most awkward I've had to face and face him pretty regularly is definitely Jimmy Atkins. He hasn't played on TV, so it's hard to get a speed gun on him, but like he bowls as quick as anyone I've seen live. And he comes from such an awkward angle, and he has that shape where he's in at a right-hander, and you just always feel you're going to get one. And he's a great competitor. Like we have good battles. Obviously, him being a mate as well. So he's definitely up there, actually. But I think that's Bell Gareth Berg bowl at Northants. It was so tough.
Yeah, Gareth Berg against Sussex does turn into Prime Ian Botham. He's got such a fantastic record against the Martlets. It's ridiculous. Every single game, he seems to produce the goods. It's just ridiculous. So, so consistent, so reliable against the Southern County. And the thing with Jamie Atkins, right, until last week's episode, I didn't actually know he had an eye extension, because I wanted to ask him about his bowling action. It's an odd one, isn't it, to say the least?
Like, I mean, he's a fairly odd look in general, so it would be rude of him not to have an odd bowling action as well. But like, yeah, he's always been kind of, I remember even when I played with him when I was 13, he's been that gangly, long, wide hip. Sort of, you'd look at him and go, you know, he's not the most athletic person I've ever seen, but actually, you know, he's very strong and stuff in the gym, and is actually sort of built to be a fast bowler. But he does have those hyper mobile elbows and just everything about him. And he's just so awkward to face. Like, you can't really see where the ball's coming from. And it's, you know, if you have a 5-over or 6-over spell from the nets, you know, it's always a good battle. You have to get yourself up for it.
I was going to say, yeah, he's a pretty tricky customer. That's how I'd describe Jamie Atkins, definitely. Not that I've faced him before and probably never will. But no, he does look like a very, very skillful competitor. And I suppose, Jack, I have to ask, because we are on the theme of net bowling, have you faced Joffre in the nets at all in your time at Downers?
I've faced Joffre on a bit of left-arm spin.
Oh, lucky.
Yeah, which he does incredibly well. Which you probably won't be surprised to know, he can pretty much do anything. But yeah, I've managed to escape Joff so far. I'm sure I'll have to be a test dummy at some stage, maybe if he's coming back from injury. But yeah, there's a few boys can bowl decent pace down at Hove, so you're always checking the schedule to see who you've got there on the training day.
Must be quite fun though, I suppose, at the same time, because if you do get one over on these, you know, express seamers, you do feel invincible, don't you? In particular, I imagine that's what it'd be like with Joffre. And what would your approach be, Jack, if you were facing Joffre Archer? Go for the pull shot? go for a little bit of Rishabh Pant kind of magic, or go defensive? How would you approach it?
Yeah, I don't think I'd be winding them up. I think I'd probably be pretty deep in the crease and get a bit of battle fever on and try and get in behind a few. But again, like, that's something, someone like Salty, he's so funny when he faces Joff in the net. So those two boys know each other from being in Barbados together, you know, back in the day. But Salty, he'll take on the pull shot and he'll tell him he's blowing throw downs, and then Joff will get riled up and Salty will hit me, he'll get one out of the middle and tell him, you know, he's bowling backwards. And oh, it's so funny to watch. Like, again, Salty's no fear. He'll take on anyone. And obviously Joff wants to get one up one as well. So those are some of the funniest, and those two boys are going at it.
Yeah, I would have thought so. Both great, great characters and both fantastic cricketers as well. Phil Salt definitely knocking the England door down. 100%.
Yeah, definitely.
In white ball cricket. Yeah. So good.
Yeah, definitely. One of the cleanest strikers of a ball I've ever seen, and an incredibly hard worker as well. Like, it's clear to see why he's had that success in his career so far.
Definitely. And to be fair, you know what, in terms of Sussex in general, I mean, pretty nice bunch of lads, I must admit. I mean, we've had quite a few of the team, yourself, Jack, Jamie, Stuart Meeker as well, your captain, Ben Brown, Luke Dunning as well, your analyst.
Yeah, the fact
is, yeah, Dunners, yeah. it's a very, very nice atmosphere down in Hove, I must admit. We do like Sussex here on the Carrot Cricket Podcast, but I suppose in terms of Joffre, I mean, one day, who knows, we may get him on the podcast, but in terms of how I would face him, I probably would go in there thinking, right, I'm going to give him a pull shot, you know, give it large. And then as soon as you get in there, rabbit in headlights, absolute just terror would probably set in. But I'd give it a go. I'd give it a go.
Yeah, you may as well. Once in a lifetime, possibly, give it a... It's just so you could tell people down the pub later you hooked him for four, like, definitely.
Yeah, that's what you tell them, you hooked him for four. You don't tell him that he sent the sump splatter in or hit you on the helmet. Yeah, I imagine it'd be like, have you seen the video of Brett Lee and Piers Morgan?
Yeah, I have, no.
I reckon that's what it'd actually go down like, but no, who knows? Who knows? But Jack, coming back onto conversation then, before we do, of course, go into our rounding segment of teammates, I want to talk a little bit about the future, because you mentioned it throughout the podcast about winning games for Sussex and potentially winning trophies for Sussex. But in terms of your personal aspirations and goals for the future, of course you want to win trophies, but do you have any kind of personal accolades or milestones that you're working on heading into the next 3, 4, 5 years per se?
Not massively. Again, it is a bit of a cliche, but If Sussex are doing well and winning games of cricket, then I'm gonna have probably done all right. So that's really, really one of the big things that, and I've spoken about it with all the young boys as well. Like, we just think, well, how good would it be to play any team or 16 game first class season and come out with a county championship, and that's one of the main goals that we want to work towards. But I guess, you know, you have to have your own goals of where you want to get to. And obviously, you know, for everyone, I guess, in county cricket is to play international cricket is the main goal. And obviously there's steps to that. It's hard to just go, oh, I want to play for England, because, you know, there's so many different stages you have to get to first. Like, for me, it's to establish myself as the number one, you know, red ball spinner at Sussex, which, you know, hopefully I can do in the next few years and kind of make that spot my own, you know, going forward. And then if it can do that, it's pushing on to, you know, try and get close to playing for the Lions or be on the England Lions radar and go from there.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jack, if you keep on plugging away, working hard, which I know you're going to do, because that's the kind of character you come across as, I think it will definitely happen one day. I'm going to be honest, from what we've seen in county cricket so far, myself and Joe isn't here today, but we've been so impressed. Honestly, yeah, it's ridiculously good. And this is not coming from a Sussex fan with bias. This is coming from a fan of good off-spin and good cricket. So as long as you just keep that up, and as you said, wouldn't it be brilliant as well to win a county championship, bring it back down to Sussex for the first time since the mid-2000s? It'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
It would be, and I live with Tony Cotty, who was part of the team in 03. So, you know, he's obviously got his winner's medal and his cap in a little cabinet. So hopefully it would be good if I could add one one beside it, and Salty in there as well, because he used to live in here before me. So that'd be nice.
It definitely would be, Jack. And of course, both myself and Joe's in here today, but we do wish you the very, very best of luck, Jack, not just for Sussex, but of course for international cricket beyond as well. It would be absolutely amazing if you could represent the Lions, and then who knows, one day, that three Lions and a crown become the next Test debutant. We'll have to wait and see, Jack, but we're wishing you the very, very best of luck in the next stages of your cricketing journey.
Cheers. Thank you very much. No, it's very kind.
No worries, Jack. But before we do end today's episode of TCCP, of course, we do have our final roundup segment, the pièce de résistance here at the County Cricket Podcast, which is, of course, teammates. So for those out there who don't know how this segment works, basically in front of me, I've got 10 questions for Jack Carson, all about Sussex County Cricket Club and the teammates that he shares a dressing room with down in Hove. So Jack, are you ready for TCCP teammates?
Absolutely. Let's have it.
Yeah, can get some revenge on Jamie Atkins for last week. So first question, Jack, who is the teacher's pet down in Hove? Who's always hanging around the coaches as the smirk appears on the face?
I mean, I'm probably going to have to go myself here. I guess Henry Crookham and James Kirtley, you know, there's a little bit there now, but I guess I'm probably going to have to take the hit there with me and Solly. I think the lads would be in agreement with that one. Yeah, so I'd have to go me for that.
Yeah, I think they would be, Jack. I mean, nothing wrong with that, of course, but yeah, I think every single one of the Sussex players has said your name so far.
Yeah,
I think in that segment. Enough. Yeah. Right, moving on to our next one then, Jack. Always a classic here on TCCP. Who's Mr. Hard as Nails down in Hove? Who wouldn't you mess with? Who's the dressing room hard man, per se?
Oh, easy. Aaron Thomson, no doubt. Lovely lad. But yeah, I wouldn't mess with him. Like, I wouldn't hide his bats or mess with him at all. No, he's tough as old boots. Like,
yeah, absolutely. He is a great, great character there, Aaron Thomson. Of course, played for my county of Warwickshire. Has a lovely Brummie accent as well. Aaron Thomson.
Yeah, he's out there. It's actually amazing that somebody who's harder to understand than me, not about the changing room. So he's a great bloke. I love him to bits now.
Yeah, he is. He was brilliant at Warwickshire. I remember meeting him a couple of times at Neil Abberley Memorial Trophy games. Just great, great bloke. Great cricketer. I miss him. I'm going to be honest, at Warwickshire, produced some fantastic moments for the Bears. He really did it, especially in T20 cricket. But yeah, I bet you boys are looking after him down in Hove. So at least he's in a good place.
Certainly are.
With his Brummie accents. Right. So Jack, moving on to our next one. Musically themed this one. Who is the dressing room DJ down at Sussex? Ooh. And what are their choices of tunes?
Probably Delray and Ollie Robinson kind of find themselves on the speaker mostly, I reckon. They're kind of just like, kind of like charts, kind of music, pretty decent stuff. Nothing too ridiculous. Yeah, Ollie Rob, Rig's good on the tunes. I like when he's on them. Ollie Rob, I reckon.
Seems like an apt choice given that description. Again, another musically themed one here, Jack. Who's the karaoke king down in Sussex? And again, what is the choice of song that they go to?
Oh, Salty having a bit of mank in him. Does a bit of, he does some good Liam Gallagher actually on a few finds now. He's got up and done a bit of Oasis. That's been pretty good. And then the operations manager, Colin Bowley, does a brilliant Michael Bublé actually. So that his is a belter as well. Yeah, those two are pretty good.
Can they sing?
Carl can. I don't know about Salty.
What just gives it a load of effort?
Yeah, there's plenty of effort, plenty of enthusiasm. Like, you can't play on that. Does get stuck in.
Yeah. Hey, fair play. As long as he gives it a go, something to, you know, provide a bit of entertainment, I suppose. Bit of Phil Salt and Oasis. Can't think would have said that in the same sentence, but here we are. Moving on to our next question then, Jack. Who's the biggest diva down at the Southern County?
Ooh, diva. Biggest diva. Maybe Stuart Meeker. He's always getting a bit of a rub down from the physio, or, you know, a bit of attention. Not quite a diva, but he likes getting a bit of treatment on the old physio bed. I'll go for him, to be fair. But yeah, no proper bad divas, all good boys.
Well, that's good to hear, of course. Yeah, very, very good. You don't want a massive diva in the dressing room, but no. Stuart Maker, great, great bloke. And of course, for all the listeners out there, if you want to check out our episode of Makes, great, great guy. And had some very, very interesting stories as well. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but yeah, definitely a fantastic cricketer and a county stalwart, it has to be said. Jack, moving on to our next one. Again, a classic here. And you are going to have to throw someone under the bus here. But who are the best and worst dressed down in Sussex?
Oh, worst is by far Atkins. Jamie Atkins is awful. Like, so bad. Criminally bad. Just, yeah, shocking. He's never got the same socks on and his shoelaces are all, like, untied. And he's just so grubby. And best dressed, probably... Dell's got some pretty raucous gears, like... Bit of designer stuff and all going on with Dell, a few Balenciagas. So, yeah, maybe Dell boy. I'll give him that one.
Fair play. Yeah, Delroy clearly got some fashion sense then, unlike Jamie Atkins, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm like Kins. Kins is all. Kins is, he's in a league of his own, like.
Well, there you go, Jack. You got your revenge for last week. I suppose. Right there. Right. Moving on to our next one, Jack. I think we know who this might be. A classic again. Who's the biggest badger down in Hove? Because I know who I would go with.
You know, by far, there's quite a few, like, lads love the cricket, but Ali Orr is massive. Stats man, like, just loves it, knows everything, knows everyone. Yeah, massive badger, Ali Orr, loves it.
Let's say, in theory, that you're going to have a badger off. So in terms of stats, figures, you know, key moments in cricket history. If you're against Ali Orr, who do you think would win?
I might have him on people's numbers, but like he would know weird. He knows weird stuff. Like bizarre stuff that just, you know, you wouldn't come across unless you'd gone and tried to find it out. So yeah, Al is he loves a quiz as well. Like, so he's plenty of information. So I think he might just pick me. Like,
interesting.
I have to give him it.
May have to get Ali on the podcast then, just to test that out. That'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Get the boat on.
I think we can see where that nickname comes from. Moving on to our next question then, Jack. Who's the dressing room joker down in Hove? Who's always pulling a prank, shall we say?
Oh, Mitchell Clean, absolutely. One of the great men, Mitch. Like, so funny. Is it like a genuine magician, like, in terms of card tricks and stuff and magic tricks, can genuinely do magic tricks. And just is always pulling something on somebody. He provides plenty of entertainment for the boys now. Great, great guy. One of the best.
Fair enough. I think his name's popped up quite often for that one. Yeah. So again, I can't really argue with that one. Jack, moving on to our penultimate question then, before our final one, which is a little bit rogue. Who's the best golfer down in Hove?
I reckon Laurie Evans was very good when he was here. I remember people saying probably Ollie Robb. I think Ollie Robb's running about 10 handicap now. But there's quite a few boys kind of between 10 and 14, like, who play quite a bit. But I'd say, yeah, if he played flat match play, I think Ollie Robb is taking it.
It's always the England players, isn't it, with the golf?
Yeah. I know it is. Weird, isn't it? I guess they're just good at everything.
Yeah. I can't say the same. My golfing skills are absolutely non-existent. Same with the cricket. That's why I talk about cricket and don't play it professionally. But what about you, Jack? What are the golf skills like?
I love my golf, actually. I haven't played as much this year as normally would, but... Yeah, I'm not too bad. Like, I love playing, actually, when I'm home in Northern Ireland, some great courses at, you know, like Royal Portrush and Royal County Down, and, you know, very prestigious. It was good to play them a few times. And yeah, I'm not too bad. I can get around, give it a whack and enjoy myself. Now, don't take it too seriously, but yeah, I've got settle in the mid-teens with a handicap, so I'm not too bad at all.
That isn't bad at all. No, fair enough. I think that's a decent level. When you said don't take it too seriously, again, that's the attitude everyone goes into with golf. And then as soon as a few shots go awry, that flies out the window.
And you're still in a club, yeah.
You do see some brilliant things on a golf course. You really do. Jack, moving on to our final one. And we say it's the final one. It is technically a two-parter. But in terms of the first part, who do you think would be the most likely to win I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here in the Sussex dressing room?
Mitch Clayton, again, probably would eat anything, drink anything. Public would love him. I reckon Mitchy for those reasons. He'd just do it for the crack. Like he wouldn't be too fussed about eating it or being crawled on by spiders. And he's an Aussie, he's used to a bit of the jungle, I'm sure, and all that. So yeah, he'd win it, no doubt, out of us.
Hadn't thought of that, actually. Yeah, I suppose for him it'd be like, it would just be like a holiday, wouldn't it?
Seen a few snakes in his time, sure. Like he'd be grand.
How do you think Joffrey would do? Because in terms of popularity, I reckon Joffrey would be right up there. But do you think he could hack the jungle?
If he had his Xbox or PlayStation, he'd be grand. I'm sure he could stock in as well. He's good at most things, so I'm sure he'd be good at that as well.
I would pay to watch that. Genuinely, Joffrey Archer. I know, because usually they take all the electronics away, but just give him his Xbox and some Warzone, just in a jungle.
100%, loves it. Loves it.
Make it happen, ITV. Make it happen. In terms of the second and final then part of this question, Jack, who wouldn't last a day in the jungle in I'm a Celebrity?
Easiest one, Tom Haines, 100%. He's not the most independent, and yeah, he knows himself and he likes his home comforts. Yeah, he would walk in and then he'd just throw the white flag and go home happy enough. And wouldn't stress too much. No, I think Haines would be the first one out.
Says, I'm a Celebrity, get me out of here after 24 hours. Yeah.
Yeah. I reckon so.
What about you, Jack? Do you reckon you could hack it?
I'd be all right. No, I can't say I'd be brilliant. Probably a few snacks and stuff might be a little bit much for me, but I'd eat most things, I reckon. Get them down me. So yeah, I'll be middle of the pack, maybe, I'd say.
Who knows? Maybe one day it could happen. We'll have to wait and see, Jack. When we see you on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, in like a decade's time or 15 years' time, we'll find out, won't we, mate? But yeah, just a nice way to wrap up today's podcast. And I must admit, Jack, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I really have. It's been a fantastic episode. Really interesting to learn the origin story of your cricketing journey, really. And knowing, like, going through the ranks of the academy, talking about the Bob Willis Trophy, the championship this season as well. And then, of course, your future aspirations, Jack. You know me. I'm wishing you the very, very best of luck, of course, heading into the future. But just before we end today's episode, Jack, do you have anything to kind of just wrap up on? Any final words, any social media channels to plug or promote, for example?
No, just great to be on. Thanks very much for having me now. No, I've nothing to plug. So, yeah, just thanks very much for having me on. It's been great to be here and have a good chat.
Well, fantastic, Jack. That's what we like to hear here on the County Cricket Podcast. And yes, thank you very much, Jack, for joining me here for today's episode. But that is it, of course, for us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To all of the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.